Listen up, people. We have a big favor to ask, and we promise it won't take up too much of your time. You know, our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors, right? Well, we'd love to hear your feedback. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it, we swear. Again, that's podcastlisteners.com.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in. We are taping this early in the week due to the Thanksgiving holiday, but it's perfect timing because we had the epic Monday Nighter last week, or last night, I should say. Just points and points and points. Vegas sportsbooks took a beatdown as the public hammered the over. 64, the highest over-under ever in NFL odds-making history, yet the public was undeterred, and obviously that flew over the total. Got there, I believe, by the third quarter. So we're going to talk to John Murray coming up from the Superbook at the Westgate in Las Vegas. Get the reaction, look ahead to three NFC games on Thanksgiving, and then obviously the rest of the weekend. Plenty to discuss with the Bonanza as well. No Mike Clay this week. Scheduling and the props being posted in time for the taping of this podcast, but maybe he'll tweet some out and maybe even get some on the website. So we'll figure all that out. But John Murray's coming up straight ahead, and then we'll wrap things up like we always do in the Bonanza. Don't forget, we're also doing the college podcast on this Tuesday, November 20th. So check that out as well under the umbrella of Behind the Bets. So let's get to it.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
We added that. We have an addendum to the open. John Murray from the Superbook at the Westgate. How are you, my friend?
It's beautiful, and kicking is for losers. So is punting. Punting is
well,
for
that's
losers.
Kicking, too. That's kicking, too.
I couldn't believe the punt from the Rams last night. What was it, like 4th and 1, and they punted in that game, a game with 105 points? That was shocking to me. And then the Chiefs got the ball back. They went for it on 4th down, which you should do on 4th and short, and they ended up scoring a go-ahead touchdown.
Did the Chiefs punt on their first possession? We forgot
about
that.
I think they did. Yeah, that's true. It's hard to remember that far back, but that was stupid. I mean, the Rams scored 54 points last night. I don't know. Neither team should have used their kickers at all. They should have just never punted. They should have never even kicked extra points. We saw they both missed an extra point in the first half.
Yeah, and your prop for the Bonanza cashed, right? Will the game ever be tied again after 0-0? And it got there because of that second missed PAT right before halftime. I mean, it's crazy to think that this game went, 41 points over the total, and the punt prop overhit as well. That's hard to do.
Yeah, that's really hard to do. And I think, you know, the books around town, I'm sure, took a beating on that game. We actually didn't have that bad of a day, though. We did okay on a few of the prop bets. We did okay with the Rams winning outright, and we won on a few basketball games. So it actually, overall, it wasn't nearly as bad as I expected it to be. I was waiting to get the email saying we did much worse than we did, and it was a pleasant surprise when I saw the figures.
So you sent out the bat signal, square dog alert, and the public backing the Chiefs now, mostly at +3, I'm assuming?
There was some 3.5 and 3. And the money line, too. The money line was a very public play last night. I mean, the percentage of money line tickets we had in that game was over 80% of them were on Kansas City.
And then, obviously, the over. What was the ticket count there for the over compared to the under?
I don't remember exactly, but at least 3 or 4 to 1 on the over. I mean, the public, of course, was all betting everything over on both of the quarterbacks, yardage and touchdowns and all that stuff. I mean, you know, if that game had been the Super Bowl, we would have lost just an ungodly amount of money. If we had a Super Bowl with 105 points and those kind of prop numbers, it would have been a bloodbath.
What would you, if this were the Super Bowl, what would you post the line in a dome in Atlanta, because that's where this year's Super Bowl is, what would you post the side and the total on this one?
I think the side has to be pick 'em. I just don't think there's anything really separating those two teams right now. I would expect the Rams to maybe be a small favorite, but I would make the game just to pick 'em. The total is a harder number to make. I mean, if I had to, somewhere in the low 70s, we'll call it 71.5, 72. There's almost no number you can make that's going to be high enough to get the public to stop betting the over.
And the public dictates the line in the Super Bowl, whereas that's not normally the case.
The Super Bowl total is always inflated a little bit off of what it would be in a regular season game, just because we know there's going to be so much money coming in on the over. The supposedly sharp guys, I'm sure, would bet under those numbers. I'm sure that they would, but we would need them to help balance the huge liability that we would no doubt have on the over.
So you would cross 70, huh?
After what I saw last night, I don't think you have a choice. I mean, what else can you do?
See, I disagree with it. I think it'd be 68-ish because you're not going to have the defensive scores. I think the quarterbacks are a little bit more, I don't know, I'm going to say reckless, but I think there's some more conservative play in the Super Bowl, and I think you'll have a little bit of a layoff that's led to it. I mean, first quarter under is usually a good bet in the Super Bowl.
If they play each other, I hope it lands in the 60s. I hope you're right, Doug. That would save us a lot of money if it's only like 34 to 31 or something like that.
I mean, I say that, but yeah, I'm not the guy having to set the line with the public, the avalanche of public bettors coming in.
It's really hard to say. You know, it's just we've never seen games like these before ever in the NFL where it's just like a track meet. And clearly, this is the modern NFL. We're seeing it now, and this is what we might as well get used to in the future, because every team is going to try to model themselves after what these teams are doing. Same way we've seen that kind of the revolution in the NBA with the spacing of the court and the three-pointers and the layups, no long twos. And the NBA scoring has obviously gone way up. Now we're seeing it in the NFL. The other teams aren't going to have Patrick Mahomes, but they're going to try to copy the model of these two teams.
I mean, you can try to copy it as much as you want, but if you don't have the weapons they do, then you can't do it. It's not like the Jaguars can do it with Bortles. It's not like the Buffalo Bills can do it.
I don't know. I don't think the Rams' weapons are that great. I mean, I think Jared Goff gets a little underappreciated. I think too many people write him off as just a system quarterback, but I don't think he's a great quarterback. They lost Cooper Kupp for the year to a torn ACL. That didn't seem to matter whatsoever for them offensively. Their best offensive player is Todd Gurley. He didn't even really do anything last night, and they still scored 54 points. So you have to think that this is all because of Sean McVay's system. So, yeah, I definitely think other teams are going to try to copy that system.
I don't know. I mean, look, you had a couple defensive scores. Some of it's on the Chiefs' D. Some of it is on the Chiefs scoring so quickly themselves, right?
Yeah, true.
And, I mean, let's just see with the Rams. I think they were hurt the last couple weeks with just, you know, look, they didn't light up the Packers. They only scored one touchdown the first half against the Packers, and that was on a short field after a safety. And they did not exactly light up the Seahawks. Look, they're loaded. I mean, we're splitting hairs here. But I don't think they are as – I don't think they're as loaded as the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are the best team, to me.
I think Kansas City, if you just look at offensive weapons, I think nobody can match up with Kansas City. When you talk about Mahomes, Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, all those wide receivers, I mean, obviously Tyreek Hill, nobody's got the offensive skill position players that Kansas City has.
But the Chiefs unable to get it done in the two big high-profile games, right? At the Patriots in Foxborough, 43-40 losers, and they also lose by a field goal here to the Rams in L.A. But I've been more impressed with those two losses than maybe any of their wins, although the Broncos' win was very impressive. Now, the one thing about last night is I don't think it was bad defense. It's not like these were broken tackles, lazy tackling. Look, there were some defensive penalties on the Chiefs early on. That was not good. But I think this was just – there's just no defense for some of this offense, I guess, is my point.
There's really nothing you can do against Mahomes. There doesn't seem like there's anything you can do against Sean McVay's scheme. Kansas City did get one gift, though, this weekend with the Chargers losing at home to the Broncos.
Yeah.
So they kept their margin in the AFC West before they go into their bye week. That was definitely very favorable for the Chiefs.
It sure was, and, I mean, it could be rendered moot anyway if the Chiefs just take care of business at home when they host the Chargers later this season because they did win in L.A. in week one, and little did we know it would be the start of the Chiefs' run. But I'm just excited it lived up to the hype, and we flirted with the highest scoring game ever, right? It was 116, I believe, in 1966, and, you know, you never know. It got to 105 or 104. I mean, it could have gotten there, all things considered.
How was there a game in 1966 where they scored 116 points? Like, how did that ever happen?
It was 70 to something to 20 something.
It was a Redskins game.
Yeah, your Redskins.
Redskins and maybe the Giants.
Was Sean McVay still coaching then? Was Sean McVay in his offensive scheme?
I think Sean McVay's grandfather was an NFL coach, but I don't think he was involved in that game.
Remarkable run. The people I talked to, Darren Revelle reporting, William Hill had a 7-figure loss on the total, or maybe the game. I shouldn't say just the total, but the game. And the other books I did talk to Nick Bogdanovich at William Hill, who said it was not good. And then Darren Revelle gave a figure. And the other books I talked to are, it was a beatdown. I asked, so did you get clobbered on the game? The text reply, pretty much. So,
yeah,
beatdown city. And I think Tony Miller was saying the Golden Nugget was a 93% ticket count ratio right on the over.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. For us. I only talk about our operation. I don't have the numbers for these other books. But, like I said, we won a few basketball games on the side, and we still lost money yesterday, but it certainly could have been a lot worse than it was.
No doubt it could have been, just given the magnitude of the game and the way it landed. And if you had to power rate the top teams, because obviously let's not forget about the Saints, who've covered eight straight games, and I imagine that was a big hit for the house, even though mostly sharp money on the Eagles there?
Actually, it wasn't, because it went under.
Ah.
That game managed to stay under the total, so really wasn't that bad. You're right, we took some bigger bets on Philadelphia. And, you know, obviously there was a ton of parlays and teasers with New Orleans, of course. But the combination of the game staying under and some early bigger bets on Philadelphia kept that from being a really bad game for us here.
Oh, good. I was a little worried about you guys.
Now, the game that we really lost a lot on was certainly Kai's game, the Giants. We had some big bets on the Giants, and we had that big bet I mentioned last week on the over in that game.
Yeah, familiar
with
that.
That was definitely our worst result of the week. It was only 14-7 at halftime, so we were able to dump a lot of it at halftime. We took a lot of under bets for the second half, so we were able to position ourselves where we could have had a big middle if it had landed like exactly 49, 50, or 51. But so we were able to get off a certain amount of the position, but it was certainly a bad loss for us.
So, confessions of non-bookmakers. Kai's just sitting there. How do you get off? I mean, I know the answer, but how do you get off and over at halftime like that when you have for those don't recall, $100,000 wager on the over in the Giants Bucks game last week, but there was only 14-7 at half, so that's a total of 21 points. Obviously, the second half total was not 31 or whatever it was, and in terms of the market. So what did you do in order to maneuver there?
Well, we had 100,000 on the over, like you said, over 52. The score was 14-7 at halftime, so we put up a higher total on the second half than the rest of the market. We let guys go. I think it was under 28 and 27.5. These guys were playing under those numbers. So if the game had landed exactly 50 or 51, we would have won all the bets. The $100,000 player would have lost, and those guys would have lost their under bets. So we were able to get off a little bit of our exposure and set up a middle. Unfortunately, it didn't land for us, but we did do well in the second half. We did very well in the second half of that game.
And the way, that's the beauty of when you take on sharps to your book, you can use them to your advantage. So if you have a position like that, you know, square bettors may not know how off market that is and may still just bet the over, whatever, because they're having fun for the weekend. But you know the sharps are going to see an opportunity to bet the under and then bet the over somewhere else on the screen and be able to create a 2-point middle or something like that on the second half, and therefore you're able to lay off your liability, and then it becomes essentially, I don't know if this is the right usage, but it sounds smart to say, but trickle down economic in a weird way, right? It's a domino effect, I guess is a better way to put it.
And it should be noted too, I mean, we wouldn't have been able to do that if the first half had been as high scoring as the second half.
Right.
So, I mean, we needed the first half to go our way for us to be in that position. So there's certainly a certain amount of gambling you're doing before the game started. I know in the first half, the Bucks had a possession where they got stopped on fourth and short inside the five, and then they scored a touchdown on what looked like a broken play. They went for it on fourth and short, fourth and goal, like the 1 yard line, and it looked like a broken play. It actually looked to me like Fitzpatrick was down short of the goal line, but they did give him the touchdown. I'm not sure if you guys saw that, but it looked like a broken play, and Fitzpatrick just kind of dove into the end zone for the score.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But look, it didn't even matter because in the second half, both teams went nuts, and the game went way over.
It sure did. What other games were big swing games for the book, for the house?
We actually overall had a very good week in the NFL, and some of the morning results were very positive for us. The Dallas game, we ended up taking some really big bets on the Falcons. Dallas won that game 22-19. That was very good for us. The Lions game was very good. There was a lot of public money on Carolina, both on the point spread and in money line parlays. The Lions were able to escape with the win there. The big winner for us was actually the Bears-Vikings game. Everybody came in on the Vikings hard in that game. The Bears were able to get the win. We would have done better if it could have stayed under two, but we did very well with Chicago winning. And the Redskins game, too. Houston did not cover the spread. They did get the win, although I thought Houston was very fortunate to win that game. But they did get the win outright. They did not cover the three-point spread. That was good for us. And as you guys can probably imagine, the Chargers losing at home to Denver was certainly good for us. A lot of money line parlays and a lot of teasers there. You know, Anthony Lynn, he's made so many mistakes in the end of the games here, and he finally got caught. Finally cost his team a game. But he's been doing that kind of stuff for weeks. He just keeps getting away with it.
So, Philip Rivers, speaking of that game, you can't put it on the coach. So, it's around midfield, like 3rd and 7, I want to say. Buck 55, so they're on the south side of the 2-minute warning. Yeah. And Denver's out of timeouts. Okay? They call a screen pass, and it gets busted up by Denver, and Rivers, instead of falling down, right, just in midfield, take the sack, so to speak, he spikes it into the ground because the running back on the screen pass was covered. That cost him 40 seconds.
That's on Philip Rivers for sure. You're right. That's not on Anthony.
That cost him the game. That cost him the game.
And, you know, I'd like to go back to the Monday night game briefly. I really like the Rams. When they after the Chiefs punted at the very end of the game, the Rams were throwing on every down. I know that the announcers were ripping the Rams for that, but Kansas City had all three of their timeouts. There was no point in just running a ball up the middle and then punting it right back to them. The Rams stayed aggressive. They tried to throw for the first down. I thought that was absolutely the right move, although it did not work out for them.
So the drive started with a false start. So to your point, it was 1st and 15. Right, so you sometimes when you run the ball on 1st and 10, and we're going to get to the Thursday night game, but like the Seahawks did, you can get 4 to 5 yards on first down and set yourself up to really be able to, you know, get greedy and get them to use timeouts, and you get first downs. So 1st and 15 changes things. I would have forced them to use clock, but again, it's hindsight's 20/20. Hard to fault McVay for anything. But I would have probably run it on first down. Now they did throw it and it completed, so the clock moved. Yeah, I know what you mean. You don't want to use the results.
I thought in a game like that, you're talking about a game where there was 105 points scored. The Rams had 54 points on offense. I'm trusting my offense, and they did almost all of that through the air. I'm trusting my offense to pick up one more first down to clinch the game. I'm not just going to run up the middle, let the Chiefs call 3 timeouts, and then just punt it right back to that Kansas City offense. I'm going to try to get that first down through the air.
Yeah, no, I can't blame you. But too bad Mike McCarthy is not as aggressive for Packers fans, because on 4th and 2 on his own, whatever it was, 30, he punted. And he basically said, "I trust our defense to prevent Seattle from getting 2 first downs than I do Aaron Rodgers from converting a 4th and 2.
I was about to say, refresh my memory. Who is the Green Bay quarterback again? Is that guy any good? If you have Aaron Rodgers and you need 2 yards, you try to get your 2 yards with Aaron Rodgers. If he doesn't get it, he doesn't get it. But you have Aaron Rodgers. You put the ball in his hands. Let's just say they'd gone for it and not picked it up. Okay, Seattle gets the ball back. You still need your defense to stop them and hold them to a field goal. And if they do, you're still going to get the ball back down by six with a chance to win the game with Aaron Rodgers. It's not as if the game would have been over right there if they had not gotten that fourth down. Either way, they would have needed their defense to get a stop for them. They just would have needed a touchdown to win instead of a field goal to tie. I thought that was an absolutely terrible decision. Mike McCarthy deserves every bit of criticism he got for that. Kicking is for losers.
It's going to get a lot of use.
Very smart point. No, it's ridiculous. And think about that, too. That didn't get discussed enough. I mean, let's just say that they give the ball back to Seattle in field goal range. They do get a stop, and Seattle kicks a field goal. Guess what? You still got Aaron Rodgers, and you're only down by 6 points. You can still win the game. I don't know how Mike McCarthy can possibly justify that decision.
I tweeted an article I found. I was looking something else up, and I found it. July of last year, USA Today had ranked all 32 NFL head coaches. So this was before the Rams' strong season last year.
Okay.
Had McVay the 30th best coach in the NFL, and Mike McCarthy the third.
It's got to be hard, Mike McCarthy the third. It's got to be hard to rank the rookie head coaches.
Right.
Like I can
That's
see
what they
why
all were. I think they were all rookies at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, so you're saying that McVay was behind Hugh Jackson?
Hugh Jackson was like in the early 20s. And it was the new coaches.
Let me ask you guys a Hugh Jackson question. I was going to save this for later, but I can't contain myself. Hugh Jackson coached the Cleveland Browns for 40 games. Okay, their record was 3-36-1. Let me guys ask you this: if Condoleezza Rice was named the Cleveland Browns head coach, and we gave her a 40-game sample, and I set the over/under for the Browns wins at 3.5, what would you guys do with that number?
Well, does she have Deshaun Kizer as quarterback?
No, she's got the Browns team.
Okay,
she's
well, the then Browns. I think there'd be... See, I don't think it's that crazy of an idea to put someone who didn't play the game or someone who doesn't have a ton of head coaching experience. Now, I'm not saying you should hire Condoleezza Rice. I thought the story was very very much a head-scratcher. But, like, remember when they thought Herm Edwards...
Was great.
What's that?
Condoleezza Rice's tweet about it was great. She was like, I'm flattered by this, but I'm not qualified. I'm paraphrasing. But I'm not qualified to be a head coach, even though I love my Cleveland Browns. Her tweet about the whole thing was great. She handled it great.
Yeah.
I think that if she was the head coach and she delegated the play calling to some experienced football people, that she would win way more games than our guy Hugh Jackson won.
Right.
But I really believe that too. But no, I think she'd go way over 3.
Well, it's hard to take the under. But there is a CEO component to the job that I think you could do. Wasn't the guy from Ameritrade the head coach at a college team?
Yeah.
And he was before that he was in the UFL.
That.
In the Nebraska
I vaguely
team,
remember something like that.
Yeah, Joe someone.
I think I read an article once about Mack Brown when he was at Texas. He was really more of like a CEO than a coach is what this article was claiming, where he was kind of, you know, glad handing the boosters and dealing with the university president. And he had his OC and his DC kind of running the respective football operations. I don't know if that's true, obviously. But there's definitely a CEO component to being the head coach of a college team. I don't know about in the pro level, but I think that just about anybody would do a better job than Hugh Jackson in Cleveland.
Well, I kind of want to find out.
You know, there was also reports that Cleveland kind of wanted to just float this out to get the public reaction. If the public went crazy and was all for it, they would have aggressively went after her.
That's really? A healthy approach. Let the masses decide.
Yeah, really gives me pause about what's going
right
on
stuff.
In that front office, man.
Well, Kai, that's what you want to listen to is a large contingent of NFL fans. That's usually a very intelligent cross-section of our country. It's a great idea.
Murray, what did you make of Riverboat Ron rolling the dice and going for two?
I didn't have a problem with it, to tell you the truth, just because Gano had already missed an extra point, and I think he missed a short field goal.
Have
and I'm always
have I not taught you anything? Have I not? Were you not listening last week on the podcast?
I'm in favor of going for two. No, I know what you're saying. You shouldn't let the recent results dictate anything. I get that.
No, it's the time. It's the time. The minute 7. So this goes back to when we were because on the last
the Lions still could have kicked a field goal. That's
right.
True.
And
that's true.
Like it goes back to Oklahoma State thing. There was a minute to go. Is there? Like. And
that's true.
To be honest, I have a bigger pet peeve with announcers saying they're going for the win. No, with a minute to go and the other team has timeouts, they're going for the lead.
But yeah, the Carolina
but
really.
But they're definitely going to lose if they don't get it. Like that's the problem. So the risk of losing the game, or at least relying on an onside kick to not lose, versus taking the lead is inefficient, is bad math. But the risk of onside kicking, doing that with like 20 seconds to go and having the lead, that's going for the win. Therefore, that makes sense. Like, that's the difference.
I thought there was less time than that in the game. I was watching some of the other 10 a.m. games. I guess I had it in my head there was less time. I guess what I should have said is if there was 20 seconds left, I would have been fine with going
for two.
I'm always in favor of going for two instead of having the kickers out there. You guys know that.
Well, yeah, so speaking of which, what do you make of the Bears? Yeah, exactly. What do you make of the Bears going for the two in the first half?
I liked it. I liked it before they converted it. I liked it both times. I like that kind of outside the box thinking. No, I'm in favor of it.
I will say I was really confused / against it when they went for it. That put them up, what, 15 or 16?
22-6, I think.
I think they could have gone up 15 with an extra point. I think you have to do that instead of leaving it at 14 versus 16. I think the risk of the two-point conversion doesn't. Now, I don't know what the analytics and decision tree says, but to me, if I'm the other team, I want them going for two when they score a touchdown, a six-pointer to go up 14. I want them trying to go up 16 instead of 15, which is, what, 94%?
And you texted me this on Sunday night, but we don't know if maybe the Bears saw something in the Vikings' two-point defense that they liked, that they thought they could expose. I mean, we're not privy to everything that they're doing there.
Right.
But I just, in general, I like the idea of going for two, especially early in the game. What we're seeing every week in the NFL, we saw it last night in Monday Night Football, these extra points are not guarantees. I don't like it when the announcers say, oh, why didn't they take the guaranteed point? Well, clearly, it's no longer a guaranteed 1 point. We've seen that a lot this season in the NFL. So I like the idea of pushing the envelope there and trying to get that two-point conversion.
I did some radio last week, so I apologize if we did it on the podcast last week. I can't remember if I did it with this microphone in front of me or another one. Remember, I know we talked about the angry dad on the couch, but what about, remember back in the day when we talked about timeouts being wasted and, you know, false start or going the hard count on the fourth and goal on the three or something? Remember when they would, like, it would be like fourth and four on like the 17-yard line and they kicked the field goal in the second quarter or whatever. And it was good, but then there was a penalty of offsides. And the old adage, like the rule of thumb was you don't take points off the board. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I remember.
How dumb was that now, right? Like you don't take you do. You take the 5 yards and you get the new set of downs with the potential scoring. It's like the field goal's good, you don't take points off the board.
Yeah, I remember. I can't even remember my dad saying that. Oh, you don't take the points off the board. That was that was the conventional thinking for a very long time. And I don't think that's true anymore. I think you're better off just always pushing the envelope offensively, always putting the defense on their heels and always being the aggressor. I think that's the way to go. And I think we're seeing that. Exactly that with some of the smarter, younger coaches in the NFL.
How's it affecting odds making? I wrote about it in my column a couple weeks ago. Once the Todd Gurley thing went down, we're seeing so much unconventional thinking that with live betting, especially in the second half when there's only a couple possessions left and you're thinking of, the live betting of the Vikings-Bears game was wild, right? Think about the two-point conversion at the end, the field goal. Then the Vikings getting 6 but not 8 when they were down 11 in the final second. There was a lot of middles that could have been had down the stretch there. And to me, as the betting side of things, it's certainly affecting how you assess how much time left and live totals and all things like that. I imagine that from a bookmaking standpoint, it's a head-scratcher as well.
I think the market is still catching up to that, but I think that, there's so many dumb teams still out there that don't think like that. So you don't have to worry about it too much. The smarter teams are thinking like that, but there's still a lot of really dumb teams out there in the NFL.
Right. Well said. Okay, let's get into the triple header of Thanksgiving games and the rest of the NFL slate straight ahead. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Back with you on the Behind the Bets podcast. All right, Murray, three Thanksgiving games. So before we look at the lines, what's the scheduling like? Is 9:30 kickoff? Now, I know there's a big app presence, but there, you're going to have some people in the book. I know what Thanksgiving's like at a sports book in Vegas.
Yeah, we actually were just going over the schedule yesterday. I wanted to make sure we had plenty of people here for that first game. The first game is your key because everybody's coming through here. They're putting in all their parlays of all the games before they go to, you know, wherever they have their Thanksgiving Day plans. You got to get through that first game. That's at 9:30 out here. The rest of the day is not too bad. Now, I will say that with one exception. If Chicago and Dallas both cover in the early game, there's going to be a huge rush of that late game, the Atlanta-New Orleans game. If the public is flush with funds from games one and two, you're going to see a huge rush of money on game three, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that Saints line go even higher if that happens, if the Chicago and Dallas both cover earlier in the day.
What about the bailout concept if the first two public teams don't cover? Are you going to get a rush as well for the bailout?
You'll get a rush over the phones, but you won't see it as much over the counter because a lot of your over-the-counter players will be out of money if they lose the first two games. But
really? They'll be out of money?
Yeah. Well, they won't have as much money, or maybe they won't be looking to reach back and fire. I thought it was funny. One thing I noticed this week was we had very short lines on Sunday morning, and it was clearly because we'd had such a good day on Saturday, whereas the previous week we didn't do well on Saturday at all, and there were huge lines in here on Sunday morning. So you can tell how the public is doing based on the length of that line.
So then they would just like find money later in the week? I mean, is that what changes things?
That's none of my business where these people keep coming up with this money from. But no, I don't know. But I just know that, like, I've worked Thanksgiving before. I'm not working on Thursday, as you know, but I've worked it before. And if the first two games go favorite over, you're going to have a lot of people in line for game number three.
Interesting. So let's talk about it. All three games are NFC, kind of a strange situation. As we know, Detroit and Dallas both play on Thanksgiving, not facing each other. The first game of the Bears laying four. What kind of – so the Chicago at Detroit is four, but in this case, because Sunday night was flex with the Bears, they have a short week on a night game on Sunday, and then the early slot on Thursday. What tax is there for, I guess, in favor of Detroit here?
You know, this is the shortest week I think I've ever seen an NFL team have. You know, to play the Sunday night game and then play the early game Thursday morning, and they have to travel. We had this line at Chicago -4 pretty much all morning, I should say, until about 10 minutes ago. We had some money show up on Detroit +4, and we went to 3.5. The public is definitely going to be on the Bears in this game, but it's a really, really hard spot for Chicago. It's hard to lay that many points on the Bears, given all the things we just talked about in terms of their week, and they have to travel. I know it's not a long distance, but they still have to travel, and they're just a very short week to prepare for this game.
I'm still bitter over last week's game. Carolina, I thought, was a solid, solid bet. And, I mean, Moore gets tackled, and then they miss the field goal. I mean, what are you supposed to do there?
Yeah, I could see that. And Carolina is a pretty solid team. That really will be one of the best games on Sunday, that Carolina-Seattle game. But, yeah, Detroit hasn't really shown us anything this season other than the Patriots game to make us think that they're any good this year. So, you know, the public is going to be heavily on the Bears, but it's just a very tough spot for the Bears.
What would the line be on Sunday? Did you mention that?
What would the line be if they played on Sunday?
Yeah, this game.
I think the Bears would be like a -3 even money type of situation. I just think that the public is going to be so heavily on the Bears in this game.
So it'd be -3, but no, shouldn't there be a tax on Detroit here? Shouldn't they be getting less points? Like, it shouldn't it be like 6?
If they played what, next Sunday or this?
If they played this coming Sunday instead of Thursday, so the short week, quick turnaround hurting the Bears here.
I don't know. I mean, it still might be over 3 now that I think about it, just because the Bears just beat the Vikings. I mean, it's all more than anything else. This is based on what the public is going to bet. You know that. Everybody's going to bet the Bears in this game. There's just going to be so much more money on this game than there would be if it was at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning, just because it's in an island spot.
So,
but after that Bears-Vikings win, I mean, the Bears are one of the most public teams in the NFL right now.
So I was suggesting that the situation is so bad for the Bears They're only laying 3.5 because of the quick turnaround.
You think it'd be more than three? Well, it was right, four all morning. You think it'd be more than four?
Well, yeah, because the Lions have an advantage on a Thursday, given what we talked about. But if it's on a Sunday, then they should be getting more points, right?
Like right. No, I see what you're saying. I mean, it's hard for me to believe they could ever be more than four in Detroit.
But
I guess you could be right. I mean, based on what Carolina was, I guess you might be right. I mean, Detroit is coming off of a win, though. You got to consider that. I don't know how this line could ever be higher than four. I think four is crazy high, but you're probably right. It's probably built in a little bit to the point spread here. And I'm not going to play Detroit. Just
right.
So you know.
Yeah. I hear you.
I'm not playing the Lions in this game. I think this line is about as high. I think four was about as high as that line could ever be. But maybe you're right. Maybe if it was on Sunday and the Bears had a full week, it'd be even higher. But man, 4 points on the road is just a ton.
Yeah, I hear you.
The Lions aren't that bad.
No,
but you know,
they're not.
I remember liking Detroit getting, I think, 3.5 in this exact same game last Thanksgiving against the Vikings. And we saw a lot of our sharper players taking that, and the Vikings beat them easily. So, got to be careful.
That was like a block field goal or something. Wasn't that a weird game like that?
I don't remember. I just remember the final score. I don't really remember watching that game, honestly. But I just remember the final score was fairly lopsided. I think the Lions may have got the ball at the end with a chance for a backdoor cover, though.
Next game is your team and no Alex Smith. Gruesome injury. And, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. On the anniversary of Joe Theismann's leg injury as well. I mean, he was in the house. He was in the stadium. So just remarkable, eerie sequence there. And Alex Smith done for the year, and you have to question whether what's going to happen with the rest of his career. And here comes Colt McCoy as they are in Dallas. All of a sudden, the Cowboys surging thanks to the Amari Cooper trade.
Yeah, and I think this line is ridiculously high too. Just the Redskins. I really don't think there's much difference between Alex Smith and Colt McCoy. If there is any difference, I thought the Redskins would have been much better off keeping their draft pick, keeping Kendall Fuller, the cornerback, instead of trading that to Kansas City for Smith and just going with Colt McCoy if the other option was Alex Smith. And I think our look-ahead number on this game was 5. We had a sharp guy take 5, went to 4.5. I don't think there's any way the difference between Smith and McCoy is 3 points, especially 3 points through the key number of 7. This is a very inflated line, and it's because of Dallas being on the 2-game winning streak.
Well, I did that piece last week, and according to Ed, there was no difference between Alex Smith and Colt McCoy.
I agree with Ed. I agree with Ed. I mean, Colt McCoy has been in Jay Gruden's offense for years. I don't think that there's any drop-off there at all. And really, the Redskins should have beat Houston. The only reason they didn't is because Alex Smith threw that ridiculous like 100-yard pick six that ultimately cost them the game. Plus, the Houston kicker made a 54-yard field goal to take the lead. I said at the time, I thought Bill O'Brien was making a huge mistake kicking that field goal, because if he missed it, the Redskins would have had the lead in great field position, but obviously it worked out for him. Bill O'Brien, that guy has been very fortunate the last few weeks, in my opinion.
Six straight everything wins.
Everything seems to go his way. He keeps making decisions that I think are wrong, and they just all work out for the guy. So at some point, I got to just give him credit, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just don't think – I know we measure so much by wins and losses, but not everything's binary. I mean, there's variations of wins, right? Like maybe a better coach could win by 2 touchdowns in all these games.
True.
Right? Maybe he's keeping
Indianapolis is the best team in the AFC South right now. Just the way that they're playing, Andrew Luck, I love Frank Reich, but I don't know if the Colts are going to be able to catch Houston. I mean, how many 50-50 games in a row can Houston possibly win here? Houston, I think, will still end up winning the AFC South, but I think the Colts are the best team in that division right now.
Maybe. I mean, what about the Titans?
Titans are good, but look what the Colts did to them on Sunday, and I think Mariota got hurt in that game, or Mariota did get hurt.
Yeah, I was assuming a healthy Mariota.
So I would lean to the Colts right now. I think the Colts, I love Andrew Luck. I love Frank Reich. You know, you made a great point on the show last week about maybe we're not considering enough one of the problems in Philadelphia is that they don't have Frank Reich anymore. And if you look at how bad Philadelphia is playing right now and how well the Colts offense is playing right now, I don't think that's just a big coincidence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's huge. And it's funny. The reason I liked the Saints last week is we're so fixated that Philly's good, right? But if you just look at them in a vacuum and forget what happened last year, then how great are they, right? Like, they haven't they looked awful against, you know, maybe they rushed Carson Wentz back. What have they beaten? They've beaten the Giants. Had they beat the Redskins?
I don't think they played the Falcons on opening night, barely, with Nick Foles.
Like, I don't know. Like, how?
And I could, you know, I think Dallas, one of the reasons why Dallas is getting a lot of credit in the line now is because they beat Philadelphia on Sunday Night Football, and maybe Philadelphia is just not very good. So it's another reason why I think this Dallas line for Thursday is really inflated.
Yeah, I like the Skins a lot in that game. But Philly beat the Colts at home. They've won at the Giants. They had that ridiculous Sarkisian play calling in the opener, and then they've won at Jacksonville by 6. Yeah, they're a shaky team.
The Jacksonville game was in London, I think.
Excuse me, you're right. Come on, they can't put the at. You can't put the at in the game log. That's not fair for me.
No,
it's cheating.
That's just wrong. That's not fair.
All right, so you have Dallas 7.5, Detroit catching 4 at home. Those are the two home teams. Now we have the Saints, who've covered 8 straight games, the longest streak in the NFL this year, just on an absolute roll. They've won 9 straight as well. Remember, they lost the opener to Tampa Bay, and everyone was wondering.
They should have lost the second game to Houston. Cleveland
Browns,
as well.
Yeah. You're
Cleveland
Hugh Jackson.
Should have beat them too. So, you know, the Saints, I think you asked me earlier in the show who I think the highest power rated team is right now. I got to say the Saints are the number one team right now.
Right.
I don't know how you could get away from them. I'd probably put them number one, Kansas City and the Rams in a tie for second, and then some combination of New England, Pittsburgh, and a few others behind those five. But I don't know how you could say anybody other than the Saints is number one at this exact moment. The way that they're playing right now offensively and defensively, great coach, great quarterback, playmakers all over the place. Yeah, I mean, New Orleans, and we're going to need Atlanta big. We already had a guy laid minus 12 to win 20,000 on the Saints, taking some money back on the Falcons, plus 12.5, plus 13. But I know we're going to need the Falcons pretty big when this thing kicks off.
This number seems high.
It does. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. This thing starts at 8:20 on Thursday. There's no way I'm going to stay awake for that entire game.
You'll be on the East Coast.
I was going to say, he must be out here now.
The East Coast living, man. There's no way. No way.
I always tell people I'm on Hawaii time.
Close to midnight?
I'm on Hawaii time. I go to bed so late.
So that thing's going to end close to midnight? There's no chance. I'll never make it.
Yeah, welcome to my world, dude.
I'm an old man. I can't stay awake till midnight watching a football game. Come on, man.
What would this line be if it were on a Sunday? Like, what kind of taxes on the short week for Atlanta traveling and everything?
I think it would still be really high, maybe like 12-ish, just because of what the Saints just did to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to do something. These New Orleans lines, they're inflated. We all know that. But they just keep covering these spreads like they're nothing. So it would still be a very high point spread. Our look-ahead number, I believe, was 11 for this game. And we had a guy take the 11. We went to 10.5. But this thing would still be 11.5 or 12 at the very least, just because of what New Orleans is doing right now.
If Atlanta's not done, so to speak, meaning like they had to win last week, their season's done, this is a good bet on Atlanta. The question is whether they're rolling over here.
Can't disagree with you that taking 13 seems like a good idea, but you know,
because they have a good offense. The Eagles don't.
I made the mistake of getting in front of the Saints last week. I'm not going to do that again. Plus, I'll never be able to stay awake for the whole game. How could I possibly give a play in this game?
That tryptophan sinking in too.
Yeah, there's no way.
So this is my favorite bet of the weekend.
Really?
You know me. I'm an amateur psychologist here. There is no way on God's green earth that Jacksonville is going to be up for this game at Orchard Park. That was their kitchen sink game. Now, whether their talent wins out and covers, that may happen. But they are not excited to play this game. They are not preparing for Buffalo during the week. They are just not cohesive enough. This team is fractured. They not crazy about their quarterback. They treated last week like their playoff game. They did. They lost a heartbreaking game to the Steelers. Now they're going to go up to Buffalo. Cold weather, not snowing necessarily, but cold weather, and they're laying three. What? Come on.
Yeah, they really went all in for that Steelers win. They should have won that game. They were up 16-0 with like a minute left in the third quarter. I mean, that has to be just a heartbreaking loss. It ended any outside chance they had of making it to the postseason. So, I certainly agree with you. I think this is a good spot for the Bills. You know, I'm getting a little nervous. I got the Bills under wins. If they win on Sunday, that'll be their fourth win.
Ooh, you got 5.5, right? Or six?
Six.
You got six.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm getting a little nervous on that one, man. I mean, Buffalo, just talk about an overachieving team with that roster. Sean McDermott, that guy is a fantastic coach.
Yeah, you can always throw in a Week 17 unknown as well, and then you're sweating some out. So we have some Twitter questions out there. Moneyline Marv weighing in, I should say. Also, Anthony D'Angelo, before we move further along on Sunday, ticket counts for the Thanksgiving games. What kind of handle, you know, maybe these games compared to regular Thursday games? That's not his specific question, but I'm taking it and evolving it, so to speak.
Well, I don't think any of the one games will have as much handle as a Thursday night game, just because the money will be a little bit more spread out in terms of ticket counts. Like, if there's only one game on Thursday, everybody has to bet that one game. But certainly these games will see much more action than they would if they were buried in the deck on a Sunday. So all three of these games are going to get heavy action. There's some really public teams in these games, Chicago, Dallas, New Orleans. We're going to see very good ride on all three of these Thanksgiving games.
And it's not just NFL. We got some college games as well. In fact, we'll talk about it on the college pod, but I have a...
Stop. Hammer time.
In the college game on Thursday,
nice.
The college slate. So I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, I'm very excited to hear it.
Yeah, you know, that's how I roll. You know, you got to find the good bets, Murray. You can't. They don't necessarily cooperate with your travel schedule, your eating schedule. Sometimes you got to know when to fire. And I like the Egg Bowl. I'm going hard on the Egg Bowl.
I love it. That should be a good game. There's some really good college football games this week. And we deserve it after sitting through those games last week.
You didn't like going to the bakery with all those cupcakes?
Yeah, I'm still – well, yeah, we did well on the plays we talked about. A lot of those bigger dogs covered. I'm still just devastated by that West Virginia loss to Oklahoma State. I'm sure we'll get into that on the college show, but I'm still just – still very upset about that.
Well, you'll be with family to console yourself, console you this weekend. Let's go back to the NFL slate. So – I love the Jags +3. It's 3.5 at some spots. I think it'll trickle up.
Bills +3.
Excuse me, Bills +3. I apologize, against the Jags at home. I think they'll circle the wagons at home, if you will. San Francisco at Tampa Bay. Niners coming off the Monday nighter where they lost to the Giants in the final few minutes there. Tampa Bay, I mean, this is just sort of it's like the Tampa Bay Rays, see what I did there, with their bullpen by committee. They're doing that with the quarterback now, the opener, and not necessarily the closer.
Yeah, and I have to think that Dirk Cutter is on his last days as the Buccaneers head coach. I thought it was surprising when they brought him back for this season, and he's certainly on his way out the door. Now, we do have one person that likes the Buccaneers this week, at least here at the Superbook. When we first opened this number on Sunday night, we had the Buccaneers -3, -120. We had a gentleman bet it $84,000 to win $70,000. So right now we've got the Bucs -3.5, even money.
So why 70? Like, how did he get to that number? Is that all you would take? What's that conversation?
I don't know. I mean, we've taken bigger bets from him than that.
Because last week the total on the Bucks game made sense. 100 grand, right. It's an even number. I mean, as much as a $100,000 bet on an NFL total can make sense. It made sense because it was a round number, and when you bet that kind of big, I would imagine round numbers are common. But why 84 to win 70 on that one?
I can't answer that question. Let's go to Moneyline Marv's question. I think it'll be easier for me to answer than that one.
I think we already talked about it.
Okay. I just wanted to say Moneyline Marv.
It's a good name. It's a good name. Giants-Philly. Philly's laying 6. Do you think Giants will be a square dog here?
I think the public will definitely bet the Giants. You know, Kai's Giants, 2-game winning streak.
Oh, yeah.
Costing themselves a draft position with every win. And the Eagles are going to be just written off as completely finished. So, yeah, I think that the public is absolutely going to bet the Giants. Right now, I can tell you, at least in the straight bet column, every one of them is on the Giants. There's very little money on this game because people are focused on the Thursday games, and it's only Tuesday morning. But as of right now, it's all Giants money. There's not a single straight bet on Philadelphia.
Let's go.
How do you feel about those wins, Kai? You seem excited, but I think that's a little nearsighted of you.
No. I do understand what Murray's saying, and he's right. You know, I mean, especially for the long run. But for the sake of it being a holiday weekend, we're playing our rivals. I'm going to be in a bar in South Jersey or Philadelphia's greater area this weekend talking you know what. I don't care, man. It's all about the experience.
You and I are going to have much different Thanksgiving weekends, Kai.
And I hope you guys beat the Dallas Cowboys because they have been chirping.
Really? I'll be watching that game at my mother's house on Thursday. We'll be watching we'll be eating and watching the game.
Moneyline Marv did have a question. He said the Superbook opened a lot of Week 12 lines at minus 120. What causes that? And could changes in the marketplace for whatever reason move that from 120 to 110? I'm assuming he means key numbers.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the board right now. So there's just a lot of games that are on key numbers. Like, I can tell you guys right now, we got the Redskins +7.5, minus 120. That's a key number. 49ers +3.5, minus 120. Jacksonville -3, minus 120. Bengals -3, minus 120. Seahawks +3.5, minus 120. So there's a lot of games that are just on those key numbers of 3 and 7. And that's really the only time you'll see us use that minus 120 here at the Superbook.
And it goes back to Jimmy Vaccaro used to tell me this about that old Steelers, is it Steelers-Cowboys Super Bowl, where they got middled. It's known as Black Sunday in sports booking world, where they got middled because they moved the numbers too easily. But now they move juice on those key numbers of 3 and 4, or 2.5 to 3.5. I don't remember the exact final score, but they got middled, essentially.
I got to think that the South Point got middled on the game last night because they had honored tickets from earlier in the week on the Rams, and then I'm sure they had people taking Kansas City +3.5. I have to think that 3 was not a good number to land for the books that didn't refund the bets after the move from Mexico City. Now, I don't know that for sure. That's just speculation on my part.
Golden Nugget did not refund, and Tony Miller, I spoke to, said it wasn't awful. Like, it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't awful? Okay, then I'm wrong. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we refunded them right after they moved the location. But yeah, okay, then I guess I'm wrong about
that. Well, but
that.
That's Golden Nugget. That's not South Point. So.
Right, true.
Different
yeah,
situation.
I don't know. We thought it was easier to just refund them.
Well, if that's
and
your policy, that's
it
your
says
policy.
It right in our house rules.
Right. Well, then that's it.
You know, it's all very upfront. It says right in our house rules about the location change. So,
Cincy laying 3 at home to Cleveland, a Bengals team that now has Hugh Jackson, former head coach of the Browns. How much does that factor into the line? I can't even get the question out without laughing.
That should hurt. I mean, that's got to hurt the Bengals, right? I mean, I liked seeing it. It was great to see Hugh Jackson back on an NFL sideline losing a game on Sunday. That felt right.
It did feel right. Patriots. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say we can skip over that game, but we did have a guy that as we were recording, he came in. He bet Bengals -3, minus 120 to win 22,000.
To win 22,000.
Yeah, to win 22,000. Yeah, I don't know what these guys come up with these figures, man. That's their business.
That is their business. Yeah, interesting. So now the Patriots off that loss to the Titans, now laying 9.5 at the Jets. At some point, you think the Jets are going to wreak some havoc for the Patriots because they just tend to do that. But how on earth can New England have trouble with this Jets team?
Yeah, and I can tell you right now, I mean, it's only Tuesday morning, but the Jets are probably going to be our biggest need in the morning. We had a gentleman bet 50,000 flat on the Patriots -9. We moved it to 9.5. We had another guy earlier in the week had done a two-team teaser of the Patriots to the Chargers. I want to say it was to win 25K. So we already have a lot of money on the Patriots. I mean, for considering it's only Tuesday morning here, we already have quite a bit of action on the New England side, and we're just going to get more and more and more as we get closer to the kickoff of that game. The Jets are going to be a huge need all over Nevada.
That sounds fun. Patriots off a loss and a bye.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, it should be a pleasant watch for us here on Sunday morning.
And a game you referenced earlier, what, game of the weekend? Seattle at Carolina?
I'd say this game and the Sunday night game are probably the two best matchups we have on Sunday. We've seen a lot of two-way action on this game. We had some guys betting Carolina -3, -120. when we first opened it. We moved it to 3.5. We had a gentleman bet the plus 3.5 to win 15,000. And right now we're at +3.5 -120. Now that's a good. This game's a good example of, you know, Moneyline Mart's question about using the -120. If we go right back to 3 after taking that 15K, we're going to take all this money on the Panthers -3 at -120, or -3 flat. So that we went to Seattle +3.5 -120 to kind of find a good balance there. So sometimes when you're right around that key number of 3 and you're seeing money both ways, the easiest thing to do is to juice the number.
But you've said you don't hope to, you don't want to do that.
What do you mean?
You said you like to avoid the juicing the NFL lines. Not this
other than
podcast,
other than on 3 and 7. Gotcha. You're not going to see us do that on other numbers other than 3 and 7, and you're not going to see us do that in college games. Now we'll do it on halftime sometimes, but only on the 3s and 7s in the NFL.
Moneyline Marv had another question, not pertaining to money lines. He said, "What would an NFC Championship game total be between the Rams and Saints?"
This guy's got a lot of questions. You know, somebody asked me that last night. If it's in New Orleans, it'd probably be a little higher just because of the dome.
Right.
Let's call it the high 60s. The high 60s.
We had this matchup. We already had it, and the Sharps bet under to the not successful outcome.
Yeah, they bet under like 59.5, something like that, 60, and I think it landed like 80. I think
so you would say high 60s, so like a 8 or 9 point. Move.
Let's call it, if you make me give a number, I'll call it 68. How about that? I mean, these totals now are just getting ridiculous.
So let's go to that Sunday night game you mentioned, Green Bay at Minnesota. I think the Packers are done. This line
really
seems short
game.
To me.
I'll tell you what, man, this is a big game for us here. We talked about this in the preseason. We had a gentleman bet the Vikings to make the playoffs. He bet it for $240K to win $120K, -$2. And if Minnesota were to lose this game, they could be in some real trouble as far as the playoff race is concerned.
I like the Vikings here a lot.
You're going to like this. Right now we're seeing the majority of the money in the tickets on Green Bay plus the 3.5.
Ooh. What kind of ratio are we talking?
It's early in the week. Yeah. The ratios are a little skewed, but right now you're talking about 5-1. But again, it's too early in the week. There's not enough tickets. There's not enough of a sample size to really give you a good idea. But I do think the public is going to be on Green Bay.
Let them. And then
I'll let them.
Then we'll have a code red.
I gave you the code red last night.
It pushed. What number you pushed. Got. It pushed.
Yeah,
never got below 3.
No. A push is okay. There's nothing wrong with a good old-fashioned push. I wish I could have pushed my Eagles bet on Sunday.
Nah, that wasn't happening.
Oof, that was a bad one.
Monday night, Tennessee at Houston, awaiting the status of Marcus Mariota. Where do things stand here with a red-hot Texans team at home and a very good defense? Let's not completely dismiss it. They do have Hopkins on offense. They do have Watson as well at the quarterback position. So they have plenty of weapons. This is a good Houston team. Some expected to win the division as well.
No, they're very good defensively. I mean, I can't disagree with that at all. I do think that they've been fortunate in a lot of these games, but they're certainly a good defensive team. No question about that.
Okay. Good. All right. See, we're all getting along.
I just don't think much of Bill O'Brien, I guess.
Correct.
Is what
you
it comes
do not.
Down to, but he's on a lengthy winning streak, but I think I would definitely slot him behind the two rookie head coaches in that division, Mike Vrabel and Frank Reich.
All right, man. You ready for some I think that does it for this week. You ready for some Bonanza?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready. I don't have much, but I'm ready to go.
All right. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Holidays are near, gentlemen. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. We make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. November is Black Friday season, meaning 2018's lowest prices, up to 70% off everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage, make an entrance, take center stage, your biggest moment, grand finale, etc. This week, listeners can take advantage of Black Friday pricing by using the code BEHINDTHEBETS at checkout. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BEHINDTHEBETS for up to 70% off. Incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
They say defense wins championships, Murray. You're playing some great D. Just 3 yards, cloud of dust, punt, and letting me make the mistakes.
Yeah, I'm just going to do the same thing this week. I'm going to bring in the oars again and just see what happens. You know, I mean, it's so hard picking the NFL. I'm going to let you do it and see how you do.
I got sloppy. I took the Cardinals, didn't play out of it, got greedy. I mean, look, when they went up 14-7, I was like, all right, these are the Raiders I know. They're going to roll over. And even late, they had great punt with Arizona up one, pinned Oakland on their own one-yard line, a throw over the middle. Should have been picked by the linebacker around the 18-yard line, and who knows what happens. And then David Johnson would have been an all-timer with the touchdown run, and there was holding called.
Yeah, that's true, too. And, you know, another thing is, why would the Raiders want to score that touchdown? Or, I'm sorry, a field goal.
That's kind of where I was going with this, or the bet, at least, my thought process.
It was a lengthy drive there. It wasn't a touchdown, it was a field goal, I apologize. But they had a lengthy drive to kick the game-winning field goal. That could really end up haunting them, because they're right there with the Cardinals are going to be another one of the teams right there. I know the tiebreaker's not head-to-head, but it's still the swing of the Cardinals getting a loss and them getting a win. So that could be something that ends up costing them dearly in the long run.
So think about that. I had 4 bets, okay? I lose that game on the money line, okay? Then I lose the Saints over by 1. I lose the Colts-Titans over by 1/2 because Mariota gets hurt. And then I lose my teaser because Philip Rivers spikes it in the ground instead of falling. Yeah. I mean, to have all 4 bets lose that way?
That's like my NFL betting over the last, 25 years or so.
All in one. Now, look, you bet on bad teams, you got to expect things like that. So the Cardinals thing, you know, I can expect a Josh Rosen pick, and that I brought on myself. And then both totals, you know, but then the Philip Rivers, and it's just, come on now. It's insane.
Let me just say that I was rooting for you on the Titans over total.
You got involved yourself?
I was cheering for you, yes. just as a supportive friend.
Yes, that's what it is. That's what it is. All right, man. Well, we're struggling.
Sounds to me like you guys are a couple of bookies.
And
struggle is real, man. Yeah. Struggle is real.
At gambling, the deadly sin is to mistake bad play for bad luck.
All right, so there it's on me, right, taking an Arizona money line?
Yeah.
I'd
say that was on you. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, I think you laid 250 on just a really bad football team. I think your heart was in the right place there, but
I should have played back. I should have played back when I could. Because I did give away great positions in previous weeks. Like, I don't know, the Bears laying the 10 at Buffalo that I loved. And now the Chiefs middle I went for at Cleveland was the intention all along was a middle. But other situations I've given away my positions, like the Redskins at home against the Cowboys, games like that. So it's not easy. It's fun when you hit the middle like you do the Patriots and Colts.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It doesn't always work that way.
Put me down for it's not easy.
Yeah. All right, so you are on the tee box. By the way, I got to compute the math. But it looks like we're like tied. I literally think we're like $25 off.
Oh wow! Great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take it easy again this week. I'm gonna hope that you just struggle again.
Because you lost 600 and you were at minus 67.75, so that's 73.75. You're down, and I was up 24.80, and I think I lost 9,800.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. That's bad, man. Kai is just like he's in the catalog, just picking out whatever he wants for his boy.
Oh yeah.
Here's one good thing is coming out of it. That's a positive there.
Yeah. Well. you know, win some, lose some, right? You got to bet big to win big, and that's what we're going for. So step up, Murray. Step up to the counter and fire.
Yeah, I got one side play. It's on Sunday. I'm going to do a $500 bet on the Browns +3. It's even money here at the Super Bowl. So it's 500 to win 500. I think these are two organizations that are just going in the opposite directions right now. The Bengals are going down, especially because they have Hugh Jackson now. And the Browns are going up. And I think the Browns are a team that next year is going to be really good if they make the right coaching hire. I think they have the talent there, and I'll take the 3 points.
That's it, huh? Just one play. You're letting me do it.
Go ahead and make your next pick, and then I'm going to announce the other thing I'm going to do.
Okay.
Go ahead and make your first play.
Because you did hit a prop, so I'm glad your buddy on the text log treated you
well. Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you what he's got planned this week after you make your first play.
All right, I'm taking Washington +7.5, and we're going to have a credit line here. We're going to have a marker on this one.
Oh, boy.
So, okay. I'll do this for a dime only, though. So 1,200. To win a dime on Washington +7.5 -120.
I think to get extra credit, you just have to Venmo Kai. I think that's what Kai told me. So.
Yep, you got it.
So I was texting with my buddy last night. He gave me that play. Will the score be tied again after zero? Yes, it was a winner. And he and I are going to be out Wednesday night in Old Town Alexandria having a few drinks before the holiday. And I was like, you know, we're putting out the props tonight after me and DK record the podcast. So why don't, when we're out hitting the bars, we come up with a play together. We'll look over the prop menu and I'll tweet it out. I'll tweet Doug and Kai. So he goes, I love the idea. And then he sends me back this long test. I'm thinking we do a Thanksgiving feast. The stuffing is a sack prop. The side is an against the spread pick. The dessert is a pick in the late game. And I'm just like, whoa, 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 dude. Just give me a prop bet. We'll come up with it Wednesday night.
Yeah, settle down. You won one prop. One prop. Let's just.
He's getting a little cocky, but we'll be out on the town tomorrow night in Old Town Alexandria, and we'll come up with a prop bet on one of the Thursday games together, and then I'll tweet it out for everybody to see before the game starts.
Does this friend have a name? I know it's Mike Clay, but what's his pseudonym?
I got to make sure that he's okay. I mean, I know he considers himself the prince of props.
Nice.
I'll see if he'll let me release his real name on next week's show.
I like it. So mysterious.
Yeah, the all prince right. of props. Big okay. prop better.
So that's all I need. I'm good with that. Prince of props. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
We don't want his real name. We'll just refer to him as the prince of props.
Prince of props, Moneyline Marv, Duffel Bag Boy. Look at us.
Yeah. We got a lot of guys out there, man. Everybody tries to lurk in the shadows, even though gambling's being accepted now. Okay. Still got a lot of people lurking in the shadows, boys.
All right, so for now, do you think this Jacksonville-Buffalo game will go up or down?
I can't imagine it would go lower than 3. But you are getting +3 even right now on Buffalo.
Yeah. I'll take that. I'll take that for 3 dimes.
Okay. Wow, 3 dimes on the Bills. I can see myself coming back in this contest right now.
And well, wait. We're going to have some more plays. This is only Tuesday, so it's tougher. I know I'm going to come in heavy on the Vikings, really heavy, like 5 figures heavy for a middle.
Okay. Yeah, it, man, but you got to work that out with Kai, because I know that's putting you over that credit line.
Yeah, come on. We're getting a marker here. We're fine.
Okay.
We'll settle our tab after the weekend, maybe a bailout game move on Sunday night. This is authentic here. Connecticut does not have legalization yet. Like we're doing this authentic approach here.
I'm okay with it as long as Kai is cool with it, man. That's his call. He's the man in charge of this little game show here.
I'll allow it.
Okay.
I'll allow it. Okay.
All right, so we're good for those. We'll have more tweets. You'll have one from the Prince of Props on Wednesday night for Thursday. I have the Skins only on Thursday. Maybe I'll get involved in the Falcons. I got to, you don't want to jump in front of a team that's covered 8 straight that easily, that loosely on a Tuesday, especially if there's a chance this line can go up. I got to sniff out whether I think the Falcons, maybe I'll just have to go a 50 grand money line parlay or something like that on some of these big favors.
Only 50 grand? You sure you don't want to do more?
Well, that's like $1,250 for Kai. It's $250 right per 10. Right, that's the buy-in. That's $1,250 bucks for Kai's son.
Yeah, ooh, that's true.
We got Oakland in the early time slot.
What are your plans on Thursday, gentlemen? What are you guys doing?
I'll be here.
Okay. I'll be in beautiful New Jersey.
Beautiful, man.
Checking
enjoy.
Out your skins.
I'll be,
isn't that an oxymoron, Kai? I kid. I know. You left that one out there. I had to grab it.
Hey, man, you got to go there if you want to, you know, put down some bets in the FanDuel complex.
That's true. No, I actually liked Jersey. I spent time there. I scored a very important goal in water polo there at Princeton. So I have fond memories of Jersey.
We'd love to have a Superbook in New Jersey. I'll tell you guys that. That would be awesome. But for now, I'm going to be in Great Falls, Virginia on Thursday. It'll be an interesting day. My brother, he fancies himself as like a master chef. So he has announced to our family that he's going to cook this huge feast for us.
Wow.
And I'm picturing it like the South Park episode when Randy Marsh was a celebrity chef, and he's going to just have pots and pans and just a huge mess everywhere. And then he'll be like, I cooked everything. You guys clean it up. Like, okay, kid.
You might want to get some Chinese food delivery on speed dial and at least get some menus. See who's open on Thursday just in case.
A lot of pressure on that kid. A lot of pressure on defensive props to deliver a prop bet on Thursday. More pressure on my brother Peter to not botch this Thanksgiving feast. So, big day on Thursday.
Are the newlyweds going to be in attendance?
I think my sister and her husband, or my sister Jessica and her husband Adam, are going to briefly show their face.
Right.
I think they've got other functions to go to. But
probably a smart move with your brother.
I'll just be watching.
I'm
just
going to
be watching
there.
Football with the dog, so I don't care who else is coming and going.
There you go. Yeah, you do love that dog. It's going to be good to connect with him again. Yeah.
Of course. I'll just be on the couch. Me and him watch the games. Let me know when the dinner's ready.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, it sounds like awesome time with the family. I know you live far away, so good to reconnect with them. Safe travels, Murray. We appreciate the adjustment in the podcast schedule, and I know our loyal listeners do as well.
Absolutely, guys. You guys have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
You too, Murray.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, thanks to John Murray, and you can hear more of him on the College Podcast. We're posting both on this Tuesday, November 20th, obviously an abbreviated schedule, and I should say a tweaked schedule, not necessarily abbreviated, because of the holiday. No Mike Clay, although he did well on Thursday, 2-0. I think he went 1-3 on Monday. He actually hit an under in one of his props. Go figure on the Monday Nighter game, and I'm not sure about Sunday night. So Mike Clay, we might get him to post some props, but regardless, he'll be back next week on the podcast. Everyone have safe travels and a happy Thanksgiving. And, of course, we will also see you on the College Podcast as well. Kai, any confessions of a non-gambler?
All I got to say is go Giants.
Okay.
Beat
great.
Philly.
You don't want a quarterback then. You don't want to draft a quarterback then if you want to get worse draft picks.
I'm living for the now.
Okay.
Doug.
All right. If 4 wins versus 2 wins makes you feel that much better, go for it.
You'd be surprised.
All right, bud. You have a great Thanksgiving as well, and safe travels, and to all of our listeners as well. And download, rate, review, subscribe, all that fun stuff for the College Pod as well.